This is a recording from the Piedmont Council of the Arts and the latest in a series of Creative Conversations. The series brings together arts organizations, artists, educators, and community leaders to develop strategies for strengthening the arts in our community. On April 20th, 2010, the PCA convened a discussion on its new Arts Access Project. The recording begins with Maggie Guggenheimer, the Executive Director of the Piedmont Council of the Arts.
Welcome to Piedmont Council of the Arts' third Creative Conversation of the current year. We're very excited to be finishing up the second year of this series. Well, first, I just want to tell you a little bit about Piedmont Council of the Arts for those who are new to PCA. We're the designated local arts agency of Charlottesville and Albemarle, and we really exist to promote the arts in this area, and that encourages arts audiences and new neighborhoods and new arenas in the city, but also encourages the work of artists and arts organizations to make the arts happen here. So we're kind of working on both sides of the equation. I want to tell you a little bit about the series and what kinds of topics PCA is looking at through these conversations before we get started. We've designed three different areas to look at in a roundtable discussion format. They are arts education, the creative economy, which is looking at sort of the producers and the consumers of the arts, the artists and arts organizations, and the art audiences that patronize the arts, and how to encourage a really thriving presence of the arts as part of our local economy, and also as part of the quality of life in our community. And then the third area is arts access and audience development, which is what we're doing today. And we're looking at the broader topic of who in this community is participating in the arts, who could be, and what do we need to do to sort of provide fertilizer to increase the likelihood that many different kinds of people in the Charlottesville area feel comfortable participating in the arts, feel excited about participating in the arts, and have what they need to go out and engage in arts experiences. This particular year of the series, we've moved away from kind of the initial broad strokes discussion where we looked at big questions and not a lot of distinct answers, and we moved towards more of a case study format for looking at the topics. In the fall, we looked at the Storyline Project, which PCA works on every summer with Charlottesville Parks and Recreation and the Bridge. And in the winter, we looked at a site visit to an organization called Create Here, which helped us look at that creative economy topic from a new angle. And this spring, we're looking at the Arts Access Project, which is a project that's really in its initial stages for PCA. We got a pilot year grant from the Charlottesville Area Community Foundation, and since last summer, we've been engaging in the beginning stages of our arts access efforts. And we're going to tell you about that today, and then also engage you in a dialogue about our next steps. We're excited to have received a grant from Altria Group for the next 2 years to take these strategies to a new level. So this discussion really provides us with an opportunity to get expertise from throughout the community as we begin to determine exactly how the Altria-funded strategies are going to unroll. So I'm going to stop now and let you all introduce yourselves. Since I just mentioned expertise in the community, we need to know who we are and how we all fit together in this discussion. And I'm asking people to give 1 minute or less intros, if that's possible. And we have a big group, which is really exciting, but we want to get on to the discussion. So what I'm going to do is have a start on this side and just say your name and where you're from, and if there's something burning that you need to add about why you're here, do it. And then we'll introduce the panelists and get started on the presentation. So thanks again for being with us.
I'm Peter Krebs. I'm a visual artist. I'm from the McGuffey Arts Center.
I'm Ann Cheeks, and I'm a visual artist teacher. I have an art camp, and I teach mentally disabled people private lessons. That's it. I'm also at the McGuffey Arts Center.
I'm Robin Hoffman. I have a show on Comcast. I don't know if you've seen me, but I highlight people who are doers in Charlottesville. So I'm actually raising money for the Charlottesville Free Health Clinic, which is the free health clinic that people who are employed who don't have health insurance. And so in my show, if you watch it, I'll give you the information as you see me. And I'd like to invite you to be guests on my show.
I'm Wendy Brown. I'm with the Center for Nonprofit Excellence. We which is the resource center for all area nonprofits to teach you through education, training, and networking. And it's a website that is helpful to the entire community with the resources on it, so it's not just the nonprofits.
My name is Mandy Burbage, and I work at the Charlottesville Community Design Center, which you are in. And our mission is to engage citizens in visualizing and shaping the future of Charlottesville. I'm going to make a quick plug, less than 60-second plug, for an opportunity that I think will apply to many of you in the room. We're partnering with the Center for Nonprofit Excellence on a Charlottesville Civic Action Exhibition here in June and July. And it's an opportunity for nonprofits in the community to address the question, what is the most pressing issue facing our community in the next decade, and what is your organization doing about it? And we're going to select 10 nonprofits with the most diverse response to that question to be featured in an exhibition here in June and July. And the deadline to respond to the question is May 3rd, and you can respond online on CNE's website. So I would encourage those of you who are here representing a lot of the good work that goes on in this community to participate in that.
I'm Damani Harrison. I'm an outreach coordinator for the Music Resource Center. And this is my fifth time.
I think I've been to all the creative community conversations, and it's been a real exciting process. My name is Sherry Smith, and I'm owner of Lander Creative, which is a consultancy that works with artists, nonprofits, and small entrepreneurship-type businesses. I'm also the executive director of the Artisan Center of Virginia, and I'm here today in that capacity, especially looking at this accessibility issue as we develop the Artisan Trail Network. We are partnering with Albemarle County on that currently. And also looking at our studio school concept. We've embraced a strategic plan that is based firmly in economic development for the creative economy, and we're looking at ways for really helping artists access that in real sustainable ways.
I'm Greg Kelly, Executive Director of The Bridge, a local community arts organization. Our mission in a nutshell is to bridge diverse communities through the arts. We do that by supporting local and emerging artists, and also fostering creative partnerships throughout the wider community. And my only plug is our big annual fundraiser is Saturday, May 1st, 1 week from Saturday. If you can come out and support us, we'd love it.
I'll plug that. It's fun.
I can give you more information at lunch.
I'm Robert Hull. I'm a for-profit business guy. I run a media and marketing business, and my last project is a store and social network for entertainment and nostalgic boomer products.
I'm Erica Good. I'm with Charlottesville Parks and Rec, and I help run summer camps and a lot of our youth programs. So I'm here looking to meet people.
My name's Jane Freeman, and I'm the outreach director for the Virginia Film Festival.
I'm Maureen Ormo Levitt, and I am a visual artist and also volunteer with the New City Arts Initiative, which is a nonprofit working to bridge the faith communities and arts community.
I'm Janet Kaltenbach, the executive director of the Charlottesville and University Symphony Orchestra. And if I'm not mistaken, the orchestra was the guinea pig at the beginning of this season with the arts accent. <Yeah. laughs>
I'm Aaron Fine, I'm a local sculptor working on a large scale project. A group of white flags, and the idea behind the project is just to bring community together, and so I thought this was a good opportunity to come and sort of widen my own circle.
I'm Tanner Council, I'm the fundraising chair for the Charlottesville Jazz Society.
Hi, I'm George Sampson. I'm a former board member of the Piedmont Council, and for the past few years I've been leading a program in arts administration at the university.
Gary Funstone, Programming Director for the Charlottesville Jazz Society also, and is looking to improve access to the art of live jazz in Charlottesville. We got a small grant from BAMA Works this year to bring artists in from out of town, bring musicians, and get them into schools and community centers, as well as putting on concerts. So we've done that a couple of times. Partnering with the library this month for Jazz Appreciation Month, and have some live jazz right out on the steps of the library, as well as films and art displays there. And big show coming up April 29th at Monticello High School, where the group conference call is coming in to put on a workshop for the students, as well as a concert that night.
I'm Kathy Brooks, and I'm currently serving on the board.
I'm Matt Cumiani, and here we have the working group.
My name is Holly Hatcher. I'm director of programs for the Charles Foundation. The Zurich Community Foundation, we serve Charles County surrounding seven counties, and since 1967, the arts have been written into our bylaws. It always obviously give more, but through Bama Works and many other donor advised funds and other grant making programs within the Community Foundation, we support the arts and we're happy to be here today.
I'm Jean Wilhelm. My field is child drama, and I've spent many, many years working in that. My latest, or for the last 16 years, I've been working with Ashlawn Opera in our outreach programs. And I want to introduce to you today the new managing director of Ashlawn Opera, Michelle Chrysler. And Crystal, and Michelle's been there since 1996 as Placido Domingo's right-hand woman. She's also been in charge of the programs, the education and community programs that work with the D.C., Northern Virginia, and Maryland schools, their libraries, and their community centers. And I felt this was a perfect organizational meeting for Michelle to hear what you're doing and for her to figure out what she can add to our community.
Okay. Hi. My name is Anna Ma. This is the first time I'm here, and so very new, and I'm kind of nervous because I can see that you don't see any Oriental face here. So I'm probably the first one. I'm very honored. Okay. My field, I'm currently teaching Chinese in Washington and the university. And I always see that's my job to teach like language and arts. But my big favorite, my big love is film. And currently I'm I will attend like a chaos, the local film script group, film writing film script group. That but I'm like actually I'm writing a story for children that I have the ambition to make it into film in the future, yeah. And on the other hand, that I'm thinking more of the business way because I really need money to make films. So it's like I'm thinking because I have some affiliation with the art galleries in China, so I'm thinking. Right now, since the economy like China has much of money, I'm thinking maybe we should export some paintings or artworks to China and locally. But I have been not very successful the past summer when I actually bring an artist work to Chongqing, Sichuan, where the panda was born. Okay, so but then I was not very successful because the contrast between two cultures. And in regard to arts, they are too drastic. So I would try more in the future if I can. Yeah.
I'm Janet Matthews, and I'm here on behalf of the Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless, which operates the Haven at First and Market, which is Charlottesville's latest cultural and arts space that is available to the community for free of charge. One of the focuses that we have is to provide arts access to underserved populations. I know there are a lot of people in the room who do that, so please keep us in mind as a venue for music and art and performance and forums. And we've had everything from itinerant jugglers come by to having a forum for Region 10, and also we have yoga daily. So we're building our programs around access to for everybody through the space.
My name is Gloria Rockhold. I work with Albemarle County Schools in the Office of Community Engagement, and I'm very actively always looking for partners to do art projects with the population of students who may not have the opportunity to take art within the regular school time or curriculum. So now I'm kind of working towards doing summer programs. In the past, we've worked really closely with Greg at the Bridge, and we will continue to do so. And but we're always looking for new partners, you know, to come and play with us. So we have a lot of kids. So.
I'm Elizabeth Mises, and I'm a stonemason in the area for 26 years. I've been involved in the dialogue on race intention here in Charlottesville, also in an improv theater group where we're bringing voice and expression to all cultures and all groups of people in art and in their communities. My goal is to bring all groups and all cultures together in that voice of expression and art.
Good morning. I know a lot of you. I'm Denny Blank from the YMCA. And, of course, we run summer camps and after-school programs throughout the, not just the city of Charlottesville, but throughout the five-county region. And so I'm here today to see how we can tie some of that into what we're doing with the YMCA.
My name is Nana Gatti. I got a very long name, but then I shortened it. Yeah, for the sake of my people here, so I shortened my name. I'm representing the Abomall Housing Improvement, yeah, which does a lot of housing projects for the community, and also runs the Park's Edge apartment. As a matter of fact, we partner with the YMCA to run an after-school program for kids in that area, in the Greer Elementary School area.
Okay, well, as you can see, we have an amazing array of people around the table, and I'm not going to forget our panelists, so I was hoping that Ellen could start us and could move our way down the panelist table.
I'm Ellen Blackman. I've been a volunteer in the Arts Access Project since early September.
I'm Rhonda Hewitt. I'm the Education Director at Live Arts, and we run a vast array of educational programs for people from 7 years old to 70. And I'll just do a plug for Live Arts. We're opening Henry IV, parts 1 and 2 this week. So if you need to get your groove on with Shakespeare, we've got it at Live Arts.
I'm Ashley Romanis, and I run the JUMP program with Charlottesville Abundant Life Ministry. And I also serve as kind of a, what did you call it?
Partner?
Well, no. site coordinator. Site coordinator for the Arts Access Project. So we actually brought the kids to the different events.
My name is Leslie Channel. I also started out as a volunteer with Arts Access and am now the Altria-funded Audience Development and Arts Access Fellow. So I'm really excited to hear what all of you have to say, because this is kind of going to determine the trajectory of the next 2 years of this project.
So I just want to kind of get us back to kind of the same page. We've gotten our mind blown by all the different projects in the community in the last 5 minutes. And I want to let you all take note of the contact sheet, which is included in your packet. If something that someone said, it seems like it's useful to you in your work, so please feel free to connect with them over lunch or after the program, or find their email address. And if you can't find someone's email address on there, ask if you probably have it. If you're not registered, it may not be on the sheet. But so I'm going to now talk a little bit about the Arts Access Project and remind you that our goal for this conversation is really to tell you about where we've been in the last year, but primarily to focus on where we're going and engage you with experts who can bring things to the table that we might not have thought about, who can help us prioritize our options, and really help set the stage for the next couple of years of this project. So I hope you keep that in mind and that we stay kind of focused on the end goal of designing the best possible strategies for developing new audiences in the Charlottesville area as we work today. The Arts Access Project is something that I'm going to give a brief introduction to and then let these wonderful women take it away as far as what it has been so far and what it may be in the future. We started with a really big question, which is why don't lots of different kinds of people attend arts events when so many of them in this community are free or low cost and accessible by public transportation? And in tandem with that big question, we ask ourselves, what's PCA's role in response to that? We're not a presenting organization. We're not an organization that provides hands-on learning experiences in one particular art genre or another. We're an organization that exists to support the infrastructure for the cultural sector here in our area and to make sure we're constantly connecting the dots between audiences and producers of the arts really in this area. So we decided that what we would do with the Arts Access Project, and you'll see images from the project just kind of scrolling randomly as we thought. We decided that what we would do was set a kind of an informal schedule of events in various arts genres at various organizations or locations around town, some near UVA, some near downtown, and all of which were free or low cost. With live arts, we went on the pay with a can night and we purchased tickets, but the idea was that someone could go back for a dollar if they wanted to on pay what you can night. And we worked with some key community partners, Urban Vision, which is unfortunately not in operation right now, Abundant Life Ministries, and Southwood Community Center were the primary groups that we worked with. And we basically tried to promote these outings, the calendar of outings from September until just the last couple of months, to the different groups. And we have been told ahead of time, you know, it's not going to work without a context for the arts that they're going to see. It's not going to work without established relationships. And we knew all the different reasons why just going out there and getting low-income citizens to attend free arts events would not necessarily work just by telling them that an event was taking place. And we did it anyway, because we kind of wanted to have this be a jumping off point with the capacity that PCA has in mind, and also the potential to learn a lot more about what we think we know, but we're not going to make assumptions about. And what we found was really interesting, and I'm going to let Ellen start off with telling you kind of what we learned along the way.
I'd also like to add that though we did lose our community contact and friendship corp through Leslie, we also picked up more families in Hooters Commons, which is another neighborhood in Prospect Avenue area. So that was exciting to pick up. So I came on board, like I said, in early September, and I'm just going to take you through what has elapsed since then and our techniques. So our promotional techniques within our neighborhoods were necessarily varied. If the event was a large one, we needed greater effort. If it was a small one with limited amount of tickets, we ran in the efforts. For larger events, however, like the Symphony of the Stars, which was our very first project, our Virginia Film Festival, we spread the word to over 260 families each time. We did so through door-to-door flyering, which I did in Friendship Court, which is just a couple blocks that way. So that's 250 families each time, and that makes up a lot of the 900 flyers you see on the cash sheet in your folder. We also hosted informative dinners prior to events where we brought in community members and offered them a dinner in addition to telling them about upcoming arts events. We did that with the Film Festival and McGuffey Open House. And then we also, via our community contacts, conducted targeted promotion within the neighborhoods. It was through community contacts like Ashley at Abundant Life, they were liaisons between Arts Access and their families. And I'd like for you to fill in some of your promotional techniques.
So after talking with Maggie about some of the different events, I would sit down with other staff and we kind of figure out who would be a good target audience for each event. So for Mother Hicks, we went a little bit older. For the symphony, that was the first one. We kind of said, okay, we'll see who's interested, and we had our widest range and most difficult group, but you'll hear about that later, I'm sure. And then for the film festival, we targeted a very specific program. So we had a smaller number, but the girls were closer in age. So that was kind of our thinking for how to go about choosing the kids. And then we also used the context of a field trip as a way to get children there. So we would substitute where we'd have to spend money on maybe going to a movie or going ice skating for a field trip. We would substitute an arts access event and then...
And I'm realizing we might need to give you a little bit more context for this. I should run down the events that we had on the schedule just so you get a framework. In September, we went to Symphony Under the Stars, which is a free outdoor pops concert at the UVA Amphitheater. And we are going to tell you about that, as Ashley mentioned, what happened at our guinea pig outing. In October, we attempted to go to a mahogany dance troupe event at UVA, which is, I'm pretty sure, an all-black hip-hop group at young university dancers. It wasn't a free event, but they had given us free tickets for an arts access outing. In November, early November, we had the film festival Family Day, and that we were focused on the event at the Paramount Theater where they screened two films, More Than a Game and The Little Mermaid. And in December, we looked at the McGuffey Art Center Holiday Open House, which is a day that all the artists in McGuffey are invited to be there making arts projects for kids and families to participate in free of charge. And we got the donut guy. What's his name? Carpe Diem Donut?
Carpe Donut.
Carpe Donut gave us free donuts for any arts access attendees that came. And we skipped January to reconvene. And in February, we did Mother Hicks at Live Arts, which was a teen latte production. So young people in the cast. So that we probably should have said outright. But basically, what we were doing was working with the partner groups to see who wanted to come to any of these projects. And Ellen, tell us a little bit more about how, just in a short sort of soundbite, how each of those outings ran.
Well, Symphony Under the Stars had a very broad promotional base. We contacted over 250 families via flyers and Friendship Court. We had 10 Arts Access guests come out, and if you ask me, having 10 young children come to a symphony is pretty important. But that was sort of a letdown because we had 30 confirmed, and it just all came down to scheduling conflicts. And then the other big event that I was excited about was the McGuffey Holiday Open House, because I thought having the Carpe Donut guy would be just a really great treat. I thought it kept in with the holiday theme. But to our knowledge, no arts access partner communities attended that event. But in between, we had the Virginia Film Festival Family Day, like with the More Than a Game and Little Mermaid, which was a huge success. It was really cool. We got to distribute 60 tickets to the community, to our three neighborhoods. And
actually, I think we distributed 120 tickets, and 60 people used them.
Oh, there you go. Okay. And then when it came to Mother Hicks, which is our latest event, we again had another 10 guests, and that's pretty huge considering the scope of the play. It's not a huge auditorium. Having 10 guests, and they were all really, really into it. And I guess this would be a good time to ask Rhonda why that was success and what you thought about.
Well, at Live Arts, we kind of have an inbred sort of category that already gives us a pilot of how to do this. And I'm sure it's not rocket scientists, and you all have this in your own organizations, but it's all about communications and logistics. We already have with each of our shows usually sponsors that benefit the show, and part of the benefit that we get in give them in return is sponsor parties that they can have pre- or post-show events. So we have a good skeleton of how to maneuver outside organizations to come in and enjoy our shows. So what I did was just basically take that template and use that and expand on it depending on the age level, especially for this group, trying to find the appropriate show first that's going to work. And even what I may think is appropriate may not be appropriate for the organization. So it was really key for me to give Maggie the script and make sure that she and the other people involved read it so that they knew that, oh, yes, we think our group will enjoy it. From there, we organized the date and the logistics. I love logistics, so it's really, I love all the details and timelines and all that stuff, so I was really into it. And so we just kept communicating about how big the group was. I think even to the day of, we were communicating how many tickets we needed.
I think we used 15, not 10, but that some of those people were parents or project mentors that came with the kids to help keep them focused during the play, basically. But we found that keeping them focused wasn't a problem at all.
Yeah, it's a really lovely show where there's a lot of sign language involved because one of the characters is deaf and also needing to communicate their past and the people that they meet. So the show is really lovely in how kids try and find their identity. And 15 is actually a lot for that show because the actual space only holds about 60 seats. So it was a pretty good percentage of the audience, if you look at it in that terms, that came to see the show. And it is on our Pay What You Can night, which we thought was a great opportunity to let them know that they can come again to another show on this given night every Wednesday that we have a show and pay whatever they want that day of the show to see, even if it's a dollar for five people, we will take it so that they know that theater is accessible. And then from there, it was just the logistics of greeting and meeting and letting you all see the space for your dinner and setting that up for you and then giving all the kids a tour, which I love to do, and so that they can feel welcome in the space and know the space. I take them back to the backstage and the nooks and crannies that they don't get to see. And, well, it's really nice because Live Arts is such a community volunteer organization. There's always a buzz going on at night anyway. So when I go into a space in our big downstage space, they were setting up for Hank Williams' Lost Highway as a rehearsal. And there were actors there who are also musicians that are very well known in our community. And they were setting up their instruments. And I just asked them, will you show us your instruments and explain what you do? And so we had an impromptu sort of music session right there. And I think the kids really enjoyed that. So you just kind of have to go with the flow and take what opportunities you have. I would stop people in the hall to introduce yourself. And what do you do here as a volunteer at Live Arts? And you just kind of take that moment. And then when we went up to the fourth floor, Henry IV happened to be setting up a rehearsal, and the director, Sarah Holden, was there. I said, Sarah, will you explain what you're setting up in the space? This is a rehearsal and not the actual performance space. So she described the tape on the floor and what it meant and the props and introduced some actors. So it was really fun for them to get a feel for what the process is all about, not just show them an empty space. And then I took them into the room that was set up, which you all set up so nicely for the dinner. And then I went off as an actor myself down to the Hank Williams rehearsal. So I had to logistically set up who was going to be the contact while I was gone. And that was Daryl Smith, our box office person, to make sure that things were going smoothly. What I also usually do, since there's sort of a menu of things that we can do, part of the conversation that I had with Maggie was, what do you want to do? And here's some of the things that we could do. And just because we didn't have enough time, a lot of times with groups with children, I might do a workshop where we do improv exercises or acting exercises, too, to get them involved. But we didn't really have that time with my rehearsals and their dinner and everything. So they went down to see the show after dinner, and then after that, I joined them after my rehearsal to meet and greet with the cast, and you'll see that sort of scroll up there. That, I think, was one of the best moments in the night because, again, I just sort of took the energy that the kids were having, and I wondered myself how much I'd need to moderate, and I didn't have to moderate a thing. And they just had this eagerness to explore and talk to each other. The kids just came onto the set, and the actors were all teen actors, came out in their costumes, and they just shared the experience again in the evening, and I thought it was really lovely. And that was the night.
I'm going to give a little bit of sort of the behind-the-scenes look at what happened with the Arts Access Project. You've heard kind of the skeleton of what we did and who was involved. There's more to the story, and you're probably wondering what that is. And after I give you the background, I'm going to turn it over to Leslie, who's going to kind of point us forward. So, as I said, that PCA went about this knowing that the question was big and that the answers were probably far too many than we could understand in a short period of time and complex, each one in and of themselves. And each outing had a different, looked at a different layer of some of the issues that are involved in bringing people from low-income communities out to free arts events. For the symphony outing, it was our first outing, and we really pounded the pavement trying to get people to know about the event, trying to coordinate rides to the event if that was needed, trying to get partners engaged. And at the very last moment, really, as Ellen said, all we had was one contact, Ashley, from Abundant Life, bringing about 10 kids who were elementary, middle school age kids to this concert. And it was a strange moment where we thought maybe 50 people would show up that we did send flyers to. And then, oh no, maybe no one will show up. And we were kind of relieved that these 10 kids were there. Well, what happened was they were kind of getting used to, you know, the free pizza that we gave them and the contest for this event and all the people sitting around the amphitheater. And pretty soon after the concert started, the attention was gone. And they were talking and playing with each other, and that's typical for kids, you know, of that age. But the scary thing was that some of the other audience members at this free concert seemed annoyed that these kids weren't focused and they were talking, and that may be a natural response for an audience member who loves the music and is feeling distracted. But for us, it highlighted one of the really complicated aspects of this, which is that we all have different perceptions of what going to an arts event means, and we have different personal relationships with that experience, and it's no easy thing to just try to, you know, bring a whole new group into an experience that really is uniquely individual for each person at each age and each background that they have, that they might have with the arts. So we left that the kids ended up leaving about midway through the concert. So at the end of the concert, we were sitting there with 10 volunteers and no young people, and thinking, what did we do wrong? And I told myself, this is not, you know, this is the beginning of this big question, and let's focus more on what we can do to nurture that initial spark for coming. And that's where we, with the support from Sibley Johns, the Music Resource Center, we kind of geared towards this dinner approach. And we held, as Ellen said, dinners at, we had a picnic at Southwood Community Center, which Gloria helped us set up. And we had a barbecue dinner. Robert actually helped us get barbecue donated from Kenny and Lee's barbecue. And we had a barbecue dinner at Urban Vision in Friendship Court. And what we did for these dinners, we made it a fun event in and of itself, and we also gave all the information we could give about the Film Festival Family Day and the McGuffey Open House. And we thought, well, let's see what happens now. If we're not so focused on getting them to the event, we're focused on telling them about it, let's see what kind of return we have. And we took names and phone numbers of people that seemed interested in getting the tickets at that dinner outing. And the week before the Film Festival Family Day, our volunteers made phone calls to every single person on that list and said, you had told us you might use 10 tickets for the Film Festival Family Day. Can we bring you those 10 tickets? And if so, where can we bring them to you and when? And so then we by hand gave those 120 tickets out. And with Jane's help, we were able to see about 60 of them actually use the tickets. So that was, in a way, this very different experience from the symphony outing where we were trying to focus on being there in person with them and having it be this moment of a new arts experience in the midst of a wide audience. But we weren't there with them for the film festival, and we didn't know exactly what the response was, and maybe Jane has some insight on that.
We really don't, because we couldn't. With Film Festival, we had a large turnout for all of the films and a very diverse audience from not just your efforts, but efforts of different mentoring groups in the community. And we would have no way of picking out who was who, but we had a great time.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got, you know, some great pictures I want you to have to show. But yeah, high energy event with a lot going on and films that people liked, and we were so pleased.
So that actually brings up another issue here, which is the actual content. You know, how is a film outing, showing a film like More Than a Game or The Little Mermaid, different from a symphony pops concert? So there's a whole other layer of the questions of what variables are involved. For the McGuffey Open House, we made phone calls again the week before. It had been a month since that dinner event, and nobody showed up after all these phone calls the day before the event. Was it that they didn't know where McGuffey Art Center was? Was it that they didn't really care about hands-on art projects with kids? We don't know, but no one came. For the live arts outing, we really wanted to kind of go back to that hands-on approach and look at the partnership model, working really closely with the expertise that live arts already has in place through their education department or through their box office, the structure, the infrastructure that was there, and the relationship that had been developed with Abundant Life through Ashley to make that happen. And it was probably our most successful in that we got people there, they stayed, they loved it, they were engaged, And we learned that it was kind of our first real feeling of a win after this varied effort. I'm going to turn it off to Leslie right now to kind of orient us to the future and where we're going to go. And I'd ask for you all to find in your packet the sheet of goals and proposed strategies for the future.
I'm by no means going to read all of these proposed strategies, but I did want to just come back to PCA's role in the community. And, PCA is an organization that's trying to connect the dots. We have such a rich culture here, and there's so much that's already going on. We're basically trying to get the art producers hooked up with the art consumers. And in this project, a very diverse group of consumers. So I wanted to talk about some of the successes from all of this and also some of the challenges. I think one of the big successes was creating that relationship with Abundant Life and really getting to know people like Ashley, who are arts advocates. You can't really stand in her way if there's an arts event going on. She's going to try her hardest to get kids there and to be a part of it. So that was one of the huge successes. And Rhonda, too. I mean, everybody's just been so generous. And, you know, the successful promotion of the movie outing, kind of taking that step back and realizing that it does work even though our hands aren't in it. I think that was really important also. And, of course, some of the challenges were holding on to those partnerships that we've created. Losing Garrett Square, Friendship Court, that was a big deal for us. So really nurturing and keeping those relationships going, and even maybe when somebody falls through, figuring out how to get back in there. That was definitely a challenge. So I just wanted to highlight the goals. We have four goals, really, that we're going to try and reach as we move along with this project. And the first one, I'm going to say, is for arts producers. So we're going to try and encourage arts producers to expand their outreach to more diverse communities. That's the first big goal. And you can see two strategies under that. We kind of named them Arts Reach, Arch Beat. Those are just names for now. Those might change. Kind of fun. Our second goal would be to enhance information distribution to the consumers of art, so these low-income communities. How do we get the information out there? How do we do that more effectively? Two ideas. Well, I'll get onto that later. Another goal is to grow and sustain leadership. So finding people like Ashley, finding organizations like Abundant Life, finding organizations like Live Arts that have good education programs already in place, and nurturing those relationships and making sure that everybody knows that they're there and making sure the communication exists between everybody. And then to spark and deepen interest in arts among low-income communities. So figuring out better ways to engage low-income communities in the arts, letting them know that arts is something they can participate in every day. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to go out. You can find it in your own community. And so two of the proposed strategies I kind of want to highlight are the arts in action under spark and deepen interest in arts among low-income audiences. This would come in the form of micro-residencies, so actually placing local artists within those communities so they can exhibit or perform whatever they do in a place where, you know, so the low-income communities don't have to come. They don't always have to come up to the downtown mall. They can stay right where they are and enjoy some art. This would give opportunities for education to happen, hands-on experience, professional development. And the other one I really wanted to highlight was Arts Move, because we found another challenge was always transportation. So how can we let people know where arts events are happening? What buses can they take? How can they get there? And how can we better market to them through those methods? So really using existing infrastructure to inform people about what's going on. I would actually like everybody to kind of take a look at these proposed strategies and think about which ones you think would be effective. Kind of taking into consideration what we did and what our challenges were, which few of these seem to be the best way to move. This is really determining what kind of work I'll be doing over the next 2 years. So
that's it took us a long time to explain this, and I'm sorry that, it hasn't been as a collaborative of a discussion as possible, but this is a big project, and it's one that has a lot of elements to it, and probably 2 hours is nowhere near as much time as we need to really tell you about what we did. But before we break for lunch, I want to give you all the opportunity to give us some immediate feedback. So what do you think about what we did? Not necessarily in terms of a critique, because all projects can be critiqued ad nauseum, but in terms of what we can move forward with, what are our takeaways as you see it? And Sherry?
I have a question.
Sure.
Through all of these various different events where you were actually trying to reach out to some targeted communities, were you particularly reaching out to children? It seems to me that there was sort of a concept around this to attract the children, but is this, you know, for all generations? I mean, you're trying to get communities participating, so what was the methodology behind that?
As an initial approach, we didn't want to make it age-specific. We wanted to try to find the ways in which the outings could be relevant to young people, to family groups, to teenagers. We were really trying to go with the breadth approach and making sure we found a place for these events to be accessible to anybody. But what we found was when it comes to getting people to come out to events, if it's not something that the kids are going to like to do or that the parents could bring their kids to do, it's not going to happen for us. So they ended up almost all being outings for children or families.
And for instance, in the initial conversation that Maggie and I were having, we were also considering intimate apparel by Lynn Nottage, which is more of an adult theme play as a possible outing as well. But I think it was timing and also the targeted group we were later in the year, not that it was maybe more geared towards children and families that they wanted to target. But we did have a more adult show in the mix as well.
Maybe, you probably had to answer this a lot when you were, as you're trying to raise money for this arts access project. But how will you know, or how do you envision measuring your success? How will you know if it's successful?
That's a great question. That was one of our. We should have mentioned it, but it's one of the things that kind of ends up, I think, always becoming more challenging than you think it will be. Our initial idea for the project and what we discussed in the training session that occurred in August was that we wanted surveys to take place at each outing. And we wanted a one sheet, very easy thing, this is what I liked, this is what I didn't, this is why I came. Couldn't get anyone to fill out a survey. No way. And we realized that the challenge was going to be to get people there, and let alone getting them to take a survey. We weren't there yet. So for the pilot year, numbers really became our quantitative measure, and you can see the pilot year by the numbers in your handout, and anecdotal feedback that we got from our partners was all we had to go on. Now, for this, we'll look ahead for the Altria-funded grant. One thing that Leslie is going to be keeping in mind is what the strategies that we choose, and we've chosen, we've agreed to do at least 4 of the strategies throughout this project, is that measurement has to be really tied in and something that is possible beyond, you know, being relying on a survey that someone needs to fill out. So that's something that we have to consider. And if any of you here on the table have suggestions for ways that you think these kinds of initiatives should be measured, we'd love to hear them.
I just want to say that the New York Times, I'm not sure if it was this Sunday or the last Sunday, business section highlighted that people who are not spending money but have money are spending it on their children and schools and some kind of effort where they're going to benefit their children's outcome, future outcome. So a lot of people are investing who have money in arts programs, science programs, Equinox things, whatever. But I wanted to give that to you because I know there are a lot of people here who volunteer their time to do their art thing. For instance, I do caricatures. So I go to Meadow Creek or Ivy Creek or whatever, and I do the caricatures. And that promotes the arts there, but it also promotes doing art.
So that's kind of a little bit like our arts in action strategy, getting artists who actually have a craft to go in and start working in situ in a community that they might not be familiar with and engaging people through their work.
Holly, I just wanted to, I mean, you're asking for feedback, and I would say that obviously this is the beginning of a conversation, and I look forward to the second half, but I think looking back on this last hour, the key was when Leslie said it's about relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think that you guys are at the beginning, and we're at the beginning of creating relationships, and yet I can think of many other organizations in the community where you all can reach out to and build that relationship, and that would be a great way to carry this forward. And I would also say that in just listening to the recap of the pilot projects, that I would like to see incorporation of letting the target audience drive which events get chosen. And I think when the target audience is driving the conversation, that's when we'll see the real excitement. Absolutely. And the increase in participation.
And I think that one of the things that we learned through this was it's a little bit of a dance. When we started, we had a lot of trouble getting partners to engage in the project. We didn't handpick our partners. We took the only three that wanted to work on this with us. And we were excited about that. But, you know, you get people engaged, and then you begin building the relationships, and then you can start getting that buy-in and getting their direction on the project. So going back to finding out how PCA plays a role connecting the dots, but also tries to do that in-depth work with partner groups is part of the balance of the project. Sorry,
Anne? I did a project last year with the World Problem of Science Festival. We worked with them over here, and we went to Southwood and Cherry every week, each club. So we were there twice a week, and we did art and science projects. We took them outside. I did all kinds of different projects with them, from sculpture to 3D, and we had a big show after the year. It was up in May. So we knew these kids really well, and they knew us, and nice relationships. Sometimes, not so nice sometimes. I think my point is that we really did spend a lot of time and we did develop relationships, but at the end, at the show that we've been talking about and hyping up, and it was a really fantastic show, nobody came. None of the parents, well, not nobody, six people came. And we worked with about 200 kids. I just wanted to cry.
I asked, where did you have the show?
At McGuffey. We had the whole upstairs. I mean, it was really cool, and it was just, and I couldn't figure out why.
Well, on top of that, I think you guys did a great job of actually going to and having dinners, and because we've tried that with Parks and Rec to get them to register for classes. But the hugest issue I think that we come across is transportation. We can get them signed up for a class, but to get them to actually show up, whether they don't have transportation or mom's working or dad's working or vice versa. So I think transportation is key to, and it's expensive. Trust me, I know. We run buses to and from camp every summer to get kids to our camps, and our camps fill, and I think that's probably why. So if we could figure out in this town how to get people to and fro, and we have the CTS, I just don't know if there's a stigma with that, or jaunt. Kids riding jaunt it, and there's jaunt, but we have a fun bus that I wish we could use more often. We do have to pay for it, but to get people to and fro. And then, you know, your end of season type thing, it was at McGuffey, it's hard for them maybe to get there.
Yeah,
and
we had a van. We had vans that they knew they had access to, so it wasn't that. We even made this four-color 32-page booklet. It was beautiful, but with lots of photographs of the kids and the artwork, and they didn't even take those. I mean, we were like, you're in this book.
I think the other important piece is to have either peers or mentors that can push. Maybe it's something brand new they've never done before that can push how exciting it is, and at least for them to try it, and whether it's a community member, and those are the most important, I think, to kind of encourage these kids or the parents to participate.
Mm-hmm. I want to just pause for a moment. It's lunchtime, but instead of doing what we usually do, which is break and everyone goes serve, I'm actually going to keep the conversation running because I feel like we've just gotten mm-hmm. started, and let tables go one at a time and come back, if that's okay. So this first table, if you want to go serve yourself and come back in, and then you can kind of go around the room. I'm sorry to do that. What I wanted to say was, as we get into this, you're all pointing out
some incredibly important issues, and I want to add to that one big issue on top, which is that, to reiterate, the PCA is not a programming organization. So we actually don't exist to go out and build relationships with one particular partner group and provide programming. We exist to make sure that the groups who do, like the Bridge, or like the group that Anne worked with, and the groups that might receive that programming, like Parks and Recreation or like Abundant Life, know what they need. So we're not looking at how we can go out and get more people to come to arts events in our arts access strategy. But from this pilot approach, what happens when you try to get hundreds of people to come out to free events? What do you learn? How does that identify some key areas that a group like PCA can respond to, like transportation, like access to information, like partnerships and network building, like leadership? So I want to bring us back to that place where we're looking at the infrastructure and the landscape for the arts community and not the in-depth program implementation. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Damani, did you?
I'd like to say, first of all, I think you guys do awesome. What you're doing is great. And I think from the perspective of the Music Resource Center, we work with a lot of low-income community members, families, and youth. And I've also worked with Youth Development Network and done a lot of things there trying to get kids to the summer programming and whatnot. I think a big issue that we run into is a trust issue. And I ultimately believe that's the foundation of a lot of the problems that occur is that we have a lot of these communities and there's multiple organizations going into these communities trying to get things done, and it's a different face and it's a different person and all the time, and next month it's somebody else, and then, and at the end of the day people are just like, who are you, why are you here, and what are you doing? And it doesn't matter how cool the event is or, you know, how many people can have access to that event, it's, I don't know who you are and I don't trust that this is something that I want to do. And I just wanted to stress that, you know, from what you're doing, I think consistency is the key. And early on, you know, you might not get a very good response, but the more you're seeing, the more the same faces are seen, the more the same organization is seen coming out and doing something, the more that trust is built and the more people put faith in what's going on there. And I know with the Music Resource Center, it's the same thing. We've been around for 15 years, and it's only now, after that long of a stretch, that we're able to just say our name and people will respond to that name. And even still, we'll put together a great event that we think all our kids are going to come out to and no one will show up, and then we'll have nothing going on, and then we'll get a group of 40 kids that just show up at the center just to, you know, hang out. So trust is a big thing, and I think that consistency in whatever we're doing and long term is a foundation for this.
Keep serving as they come back in.
And what I'm, as I'm listening to what everyone's saying, I'm kind of siphoning where in this whole process of these wonderful goals are there some key components that can, where you can start to build some solutions on all of this. And what I keep coming to is this whole aspect of the community leadership and the mentors. You know, statewide now they have this term they keep using. It's called spark plugs. And what that is just identifying who the people are, that just the everyday community folk who are excited about something, who have just that little bit of a spark that gets them excited. If the organizations that become partners in this endeavor take on the role of the tracking, Khaki, look what you're talking about, the metrics, all of that aspect of it. And then that frees the organizations and the communities that are trying to get people together to do nothing but build relationship and trust within that community. And one person can surface out of there that sort of is that focused person. Then you have a very, very strong partnership duo between the organization and that community individual, right. Not just the community, that individual. And over time, that really will start to grow, and then it does provide the metrics that you're looking for. And it does it in such a way that you're not handing out surveys to children and their parents, and they're all going, I just want to get out of here, Nobody does that anymore. I mean, organizationally, we all do SurveyMonkey, but, you know, it's not something that these communities are going to engage in. They're there for the experience, the relationship building, the friendships, the fun, and it benefits everyone if you really clearly say, what is my role? What am I doing in this? And not try to do too much right. in that process.
It sounds like you all are kind of bringing us down to the bottom half of these, the leadership development and the sparking.
I don't know if you had a way to gauge this, but sort of speaking of relationships, was there any like overlap in terms of audience from like, the Storyline Project people that were involved with that? I don't really remember like the all of them.
Well, Erica is a good person to ask. The Storyline Project is a partnership that we do with Parks and Recreation every summer, and actually we had discussed the idea of bringing Storyline into more of the arts access overall umbrella, but the communities that we were working with primarily were Blue Ridge Commons, Friendship Court, and Southwood to the extent that we were able to. Is that any overlap?
Mine is Southwood, South First Street, or Friendship Court, and Blue Ridge Commons we definitely serve. Most of our kids during our camps come from low-income housing or are on some sort of assistance, 90% of them. So there could have been, I saw some of our kids that come to camp or participate in Quick Float or some of our other events that we kind of target for the low-income population. So.
Well, my only one other question was, I know Event Life does some with like after-school programs. Was there any outreach with like ESL programs in Southwood or...
Yeah, we worked, there was a university student named Alexandra Triana, who, am I pronouncing her name correctly? She was sort of bringing UVA student tutors to Southwood Community Center on a regular basis and coordinating events through them, and we did outreach through that partnership, but there were layers of challenges related to that. Students have busy schedules, and to the extent that what we could offer fit in with what they were providing through their activities, it worked. And that's in large part how Abundant Life, the partnership with Abundant Life, ended up panning out. But, you know, that's something that we're learning as far as developing the infrastructure is that it's probably five steps before we can get to the point where passing out flyers for things actually works. That we need to be looking at the existing programs for young people in some of these communities and linking them up with the existing arts organizations.
Can I make a comment on that?
Yeah.
Alexandra Triana is a UVA intern that spearheads the Latino Student Alliance program that partners with my program in the schools, and we do the tutoring in alignment with the curriculum and things like that. In addition to that, our intention was to reach out into the community and to the parents. It's very difficult to move people who are not used to having art in their life to appreciate art. And it's a training process, and I really feel like we have to be a little bit more patient and understanding in terms of they just don't get it. I mean, and it's there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the way it is. So but what I'm saying is that we just need to be more patient in terms of, like, we need to really engage the families more so than only the kids. And I think that's where the disconnect was, because the thought of the idealistic students was, oh, we just get the kids all excited and they'll get their parents excited. Mm-hmm. Well, their parents were thinking, well, who's going to take you?
And I think I want to point out this Arts Reach, the community handbook, because I go back to who is PCA in this community and what is our role here. The idea behind the handbook is that we provide organizations who can learn that there is value in being patient with communities that aren't immediately receptive to your programming, and that if we give them some encouragement to reach out to communities that may initially not be receptive and may take a lot of time to nurture that relationship with, that there's a value for the whole community in doing that. So we're looking at how PCA can provide resources to an individual organization and really advocacy as far as saying there are more people to reach than the people who are already coming to your events and who are already coming to your education programs, and there's more besides the schools that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
And let's help each other access that opportunity.
Has there been, in all the time I've been coming to these, I don't know that we've really addressed this particular question, but has there been an asset identification for Charlottesville, a creative cultural asset survey or just assessment done in this community. Because one of the things, again, that's just jumping out at me here is how many of these programs actually have a very easy segue for inviting and starting to build this on. Live arts, it's easy. You've got pay what you can night. There's already something in place that gives you opportunity within your content, you know, process to open up and say, well, we can do it on this night. How many, when you said you were having a hard time engaging partners in this at that level, what is the asset opportunity gap in this community for that type of thing? So a lot of organizations right now are like, well, you know what, we charge $25 a ticket. How are we going to make that happen?
I think it goes deeper than that, too, because there can be a pay-what-you-can night that exists that not only Live Arts, but Play On and some other organizations that are always free, but who's using it, you know? Who actually comes on pay-what-you-can night?
But, I mean, have you identified, is anybody identifying other wonderful opportunities like that, because to me that there's a real engagement place there for the organizations, and then back to the other piece, really then identifying in the community, because you know, to really look at what the communities want, to ask them what kind of things would you attend is important, to find that person you can start building the trust with is important, but then to know organizationally what can the organization's capacity handle and really start to make this in a sustainable way? Because one of the things that I really hate is when an organization comes in, they've got some wonderful, great program, they do it one time, and then it's gone. You know, it's like they give up, or it just didn't work, rather than creating something that's going to be lasting and sustainable over time. So I'm wondering if there's just been, if anybody has even thought about identifying, in terms of the breadth of art programming in this community, where those opportunities exist.
I'm going to flip this on its head. Sorry. Because I'm going back to what you were saying about the people in the community of trust. I heard this a number of times in our group in dialogue on race. Everybody comes in exactly as you just said. Everybody comes in, the faces change constantly. They say they're doing it, they're not doing it, blah, 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 blah. Or individuals in low-income communities, as represented in the conversation in race that I was part of, the message that was conveyed very specifically was, you know, organizations will use us so they can say, we do this for this community. So, which builds distrust very reasonably, and the faces always change. So, the way I want to flip it on its head is have it not be about organizations and PCA and Live Arts, but be about the mentors and the individuals within the communities. And those people already have a relationship. They already have that trust. They can sit down with that family or that individual and say, you know, here are the four things that we know are coming up. Anything sound fun? It's not about Live Arts' program. It's about, I want to take you to this cool thing. So if it's about getting people engaged in the arts, then engage the people, not the and look to the organizations that already have the relationships. Don't create new relationships necessarily.
Well, I think that's an interesting concept. I know that the individuals, especially on some of the leadership and mentoring components of our proposed strategies, is a sort of a linchpin point. But I would say that without the organizations who are producing, there are no events to go to.
I agree with that, but it's a case of who are you putting in front of the desired community? And all I'm suggesting is, in flipping it on its head, is put forward that Boys and Girls Club is organizing this, and they're bringing them to Live Arts or whatever, so you have two different sets of partners.
Okay. So it's accessible.
But that is what you're doing.
That is.
I mean, that's basically the model that she's been using.
I would suggest that's why Abundant Life worked. Because there's that trust. Abundant Life was actively engaged and brought them there, as opposed to some of the other ones.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to chime in on that a little bit. Go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to link in with the dialogue on race and offer everybody here to come to an action event meeting that everybody is welcome to in the community. The facilitators, the participants, and the community are welcome to come to the Martin Luther King Theater that morning from 10 to 12. It's where
May 15th.
Where all of the groups that participated in the Dialogue on Race will come and present their 2 to 3 action steps that the 6 weeks warranted from those meetings. That way, each of us can understand the different perspectives that were gathered from our community on low-income housing, on racial disparities that we all experience here, and how to start bridging the food not bombs, the art in the different communities, the different groups that are trying to give but are being met with a form of resistance or, you know, distrust or not really understanding. So as I'm listening to everyone, I'm very grateful, and I feel the merging, we're right at the edge of this merging that is ready to happen. We just need to bring the information forward, I think.
This is kind of I hear a lot of talk about bringing arts into communities, and even comments about, you know, some communities are not, you know, families don't get art or something. Mm-hmm. And I sort of feel like certain types of art, you know, like symphony or performance, those are going to be hard sells across the spectrum of humanity, you know, or Americans. I mean, every community, every human culture and every community around here has their own tendency for creative self-expression somewhere or another. So, I mean, isn't every community doing it in their own way? I mean, if you're trying to sell a symphony to anybody, or an opera or something like that, that's going to be tough. But every culture has its own form of their community. You've got dance, you've got, you know, visual art, singing, you know. I mean, what kind of does the PCA do to identify the already, you know, I hesitate to use the word indigenous, but the art forms are already in place throughout these communities that might be at odds with certain, you know, some of these other quote-unquote, you know, art forms.
I think, yesterday we had a jump class. We brought in the UVA Salsa Club to teach some jumps, to teach some salsa steps to the jump kids. About halfway through the class, we go to board. They get the steps, they can do the salsa steps, try what they want to do. They want to jerk. Everybody wants to jerk.
They want to do what?
It's a new dance. Yeah,
okay, another dance. Okay.
It's a dance. I look ridiculous when I try to jerk. And the salsa club girls, the ones who came, so there's this like inconsistency in the experts that you need to teach the style of dance that is their indigenous cultural creative expression, whatever you want to call it, we don't have. So when we take a group of people, one is not out yet, to the Music Resource Center, it's a perfect fit for us because they have Ike, who grew up in our neighborhood, who teaches class there, who's on staff there, and who works and understands and gets our kids. So, Damani, I'm plugging you. Talk about Ike and how, so he knows their style. And I break out into cold sweats when I have to lead the young kids in a hip hop work because I have no real knowledge in that area.
Well, how do you think parents feel when they're supposed to attend a symphonic event at the University of Virginia's amphitheater?
I would be careful about the way we're using words because I don't think, I think that there was no "you're supposed to" about this project. There was "we hope you will," and there were events that, while they may not have reflected the vast diversities of our various communities, you know, there was a hip hop dance event that no one came to.
Excuse me, Maggie, there were 5,000 people in the amphitheater, so somebody's on it.
But I also want to caution that we don't make assumptions about, like, only low-income people like hip hop and only middle-income people like opera, or that. Right. In West Haven, there isn't the next greatest opera singer. They just need the opportunity to be developed. And so, I'm going back to, like, it's all about providing access, which is what you're getting at, and then letting every individual, whether it be a child or an adult, find their own passion and what medium or what part of the art inspires them.
Right.
And what you're trying to get to is the access which is the best way to connect these people to those opportunities.
How do you increase the likelihood that the connections will happen?
One thing that
was
Can I just say something really quickly? Because I've been, when you talk about the arts, what you really need to provide is accessibility. And in our town, that includes transportation, but accessibility so that you can let the process drive your outcome, okay? Which means that you will be disappointed if you don't end up with a large group at a fabulous event that you planned, but the focus is on how many people have been exposed to so many different art forms through the process. And when it comes down to accessibility, it's absolutely about providing access and letting people choose what speaks to them. And that art transcends, the arts transcend culture, race. I mean, it just is not about that. So you can't assume that there are particular people that are going to tango better because they're Latin American or, you know, and to me that's putting people in a box, right? It's like it's the opposite of what you're trying to do. So in some ways, what Wendy said about turning it on its head is, I believe, what you would need to do to be successful in providing art access, because you don't presuppose what is going to speak
exactly
to anybody.
Right. That's right.
You have it out there, and people look at it and they choose.
And I would say that's in large part what we try to do. I want to
no
say
question. I totally agree with that.
One short little anecdote that was meaningful for me in the process: the symphony outing. We put flyers on every door in Friendship Court. And the day of the symphony, we went to Friendship Court to meet the group that was going to come, finding out that the person who had signed up the attendees wasn't at the community center, and no one was waiting to come. And we just started talking to some people in the neighborhood. Every single person that we talked to knew what I was talking about because they all got a flyer on their door. That's something,
right?
You know, that someone cared to put a flyer about an arts event on their door, and that they read it and they knew what I was talking about and chose not to go. Something.
Can I just finish? And I do want to let y'all know how the story ends. So, they had a third person from the Salsa Club coming yesterday. He was late, and thankfully he knew a little about the jerk dance. And so what he did was he ended up like splitting it, and he'd do 2 8-counts of salsa and then two 8-counts of jerk, and he's intermingling the two forms. So that was a perfect medium, and the kids got into that, and suddenly the salsa wasn't something that they didn't understand or know or like, because it was couched in a jerk, and it was, they used the jerk song also. So, you know, there's a lot of give and take. And I would like to speak really quickly about the symphony event, because it was, in my mind, it was hugely successful, and I will tell you all the story that we started out the evening. I'll make this brief. I think I had 5 kids in my car. I know that's illegal. I shoved 2 of them in the back. They're small. They walked together. But, you know, it was like they really wanted to go. So I was like, we're going to make this happen, and hopefully I won't get stopped. And I don't, so that was good. But we get there, and you know, where's the pizza? That's all they're asking. Where's the pizza? Where's the pizza? Where's the pizza? They don't even really, I don't think, understand fully what's about to happen. They get the pizza, great. And we're sitting there, and the music starts. Miss Ashley, this is white people music. And I'm like, no, it's not. What does that mean? Like, and they're very, very much opposed to what they're hearing. They can't connect to it for whatever reason. Some song comes on, I think it was a West Side Story song, and I start singing. They like start to laugh at me, but it's a song that I know and I like. For whatever reason, at some point after that, in the next 15 minutes, during the music, somehow they connected to it. And the same boy who had turned around and said, hey, this is white people music, why are we here, was doing this. I looked down, and he was going like this. And it was the most incredible moment for me, because he just got it, and he was
connecting to the music, you know. And then we had the other kids, Phil and Soda, start to cry, and the woman looks at me like, what are you doing? And then we had to leave. But it's like, but there was that moment, and I think that, you know, the word symphony might be a little intimidating to them, or not, but, I mean, it was an experience, and it was fundamentally broken down, them hearing music, them connecting to it, and that has worked.
Question about that?
Yeah.
First of all, when I mentioned the fact that I was doing all this stuff, it's because I feel like the engagement, which you're talking about, you know, you have to be consistent, you have to be there, and you have to sort of do the same thing so that people recognize what you're doing, or any organization. But, you know, how, for instance, UVA tied in the science program with the arts. They made a big deal. They launched this program, and they realized that people were lacking the arts. And today, as the how students are going through, they have no idea how to do anything.
Right.
They can't cook. They have no conception of things. So we're trying to plan. So what I'm trying to suggest here is, in the schools, if there's no, I don't really know, but if there's no fabrication of it.
I just want to say that I think there's two things. Fundamentally, I think there's truth in a lot of things that have already been said about the mentors, about building trust, about the momentum and the time frame. And I think that one of the things that creates so much trouble is that we're all working for organizations that need measurables, that need to raise money, that need to get in there and get something done and prove it within an annual time frame. And these things don't work that way. I don't think that they... I don't think these relationships happen that fast. I don't think that the access comes that quickly. And I think that you have to plant those seeds, and you have to plant them both in the kids and in the parents. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you're building relationships with both, and then over the long haul, those kids are going to get engaged through the workshops and through, you know, the studio at MRC or at Lighthouse or at the Bridge. Whatever they're doing is going to spark that interest. Down the road, they're going to say, and you said, you want to go see the opera? And they say, yeah, because they know who you are. They're excited about the medium. And it's not this sort of anomaly that shows up on the doorstep and then is gone. So I think that those forces are one of the big things we have to overcome is how do we invest in a really long, more long-term relationship building process while we're trying to get grants, funding, and have all those pressures upon us. I mean, I think that's a major problem. But I vote go slow, build the relationships, and all the access.
In our community, if you don't know this, I don't want to call it trick, but then if you are not aware of this particular issue, nothing you do here will ever move forward. There's a trust issue in our community, from healthcare to everything. So everything you do here depends upon the providers. I work for Region 10. I'm a behavior specialist with Region 10. I go to homes and all these places. The face that goes to the home makes things happen.
Right.
So if we can move forward with the arts, we have to do our very best to bring in a very huge, diverse providers of art so that they can connect to the people we are targeting.
Exactly.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
Other than that, we will go and go and go and go and nothing will happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Jean has not spoken.
Yes.
You keep mentioning opera. So I really have to mention opera. For about 16 years, Ashland Opera has had an outreach program, or several outreach programs. One is artists in residencies in the schools. We have a week of that every year that goes to city and county schools and a few independent schools. And we have two artists, a pianist and a singer. And we have a program that has been successful. I just picked up the evaluation forms of the thing that just happened last week, and so far so good. We are very pleased with what's been happening with that. Our other two programs are one that happens during the opera season in the summer, and this is called Kids Fest, and we work with City Parks and Rec and with the city schools because children who come to the schools in the morning, then they go to the Parks and Rec programs in the afternoon, and we send an apprentice singer to each of those schools in the morning, and they talk about the opera or the musical theater, which are the two productions that we have every year. And then those children are invited to the dress rehearsal, and they come about 45 minutes to an hour ahead of time, and they have an educational experience in the theater and with some of the people they're going to see on stage, as well as they learn about the music, they learn about the plot. And one of our key things is using what's done in both the city and the county schools and many other schools all over the United States, something called life skills. And this is what they learn about, you know, the development of their life skills. And we talk about the characters in the performance that they're going to see and the life skills that they have. Well, it's very interesting because last year at the Marriage of Figaro, the Count was sort of making a play for one of the women in the production, and all the children in the audience said, oh, no. I mean, right away they caught, this life skill thing, which is something that they relate to in their schools all the time. Anyhow, we've been doing this for 16 years. I can hardly wait to see what happens with Don Giovanni this year. We think the Count and the Marriage of Figaro was bad. We're looking forward. Michelle has already written information about this for Washington Opera, so we're using Michelle's work that she's already done as a priming thing, so that yes, opera does work, and it has worked. And the other thing is Opera Connects for teachers, and we invite classroom teachers, music teachers, any teacher to come and take this course that we give in the summer, and it relates to the dress rehearsals in the operas.
So I'm sorry, I feel like I keep trying to bring us back to, this project or PCA or something specific, what I'm really trying to do is make this as valuable as far as follow-up as it possibly can. And I think that all of the perspectives and all of the different elements of these questions are so valuable, and I hate to be smoothing over things like relationship building or content or context for art forms. But I want to assume that we all agree that this is a multifaceted issue, and that we all are invested in the idea of getting closer and closer to some, we're getting better, I guess. We're more patient and we're more focused on the idea of reaching more groups through the arts, and that ultimately we are all on the same team. And assuming that we're on the same team, and assuming that PTA is greased for your wheels, the question is, what can we do to help? And as Leslie has described, we have some proposed ideas, and these have been designed taking into consideration a lot of the things that we talked about today and the experiences that came through the project. And while none of them build relationships between PCA and some community or some specific arts organization, what they do is they assume that through these kinds of activities, we can help the relationships grow between groups, and we can help the dots get connected somehow. And that it is a combination of, in the first case, encouraging organizations to have patience and to think beyond their current audience. And the second goal, to think about the resources that we already have at our disposal, the calendars, the bus lines, what's already there, and how can we encourage arts organizations to use that in their promotion, or encourage community groups to keep that in mind when they're planning outreach projects or field trips. We look at leadership and who we have the spark plugs. Someone mentioned, I think that might have been Sherry, who are the spark plugs? How can we make more of them? And what is PCA's role in getting all those spark plugs together to build relationships among themselves and encourage each other to keep doing the work that they're doing, bringing the arts back to the table in diverse communities, or bringing diverse communities back to the table of the arts. And then the last is that what you're talking about, the experience. Can we bring organizations or events into new communities? Can we bring artists into new communities? Can we nurture the growth of the individuals that can help provide context and help go door to door? And so I'd like for us to think about how we go about making decisions now that we have some opportunities in front of us, and use you as a group of people that can help us prioritize our options. And I'm also going to introduce the action group concept really quickly. We decided, many of you have attended a creative conversation, received an email from me probably in February about our action groups. And this is an opportunity for us to take all of the ideas that are reverberating in the room right now and come back to the table with them, with a smaller group of people who really care, who want to do something about it, and who can help continue to guide PCA throughout the year before the next annual conversation takes place on this topic. And so it's really a working group for us to keep this conversation rolling without having to get you guys in here every month for 2 hours. We went down to an organization called Create here in Chattanooga, and we sort of got a curriculum for action group procedures. And there are 5 copies of the process through which you go about looking at needs and potential strategies for responding to those needs, and then deciding what to do first, what makes sense moving forward with, given your capacity and the potential impact that it might have, what doesn't make sense. So we want to get a group of some of you all, perhaps, and maybe some people who aren't around the table, to sit down with us, with me and Leslie, throughout the year, and be on an action group with us, helping us make steps forward. It's not just about what idea seems cool. It's about what do we really have the capacity to do? What has the potential to make change happen or begin the process of making change, which could be years in, unfolding. But 15 years.
Well, if this worked in Chattanooga, then it's got to be able to work here, because I've been to Chattanooga, and there's some effed up places. So we've got to be able to make it work. But that's not really what I wanted to say. I think to talk about solutions and things that we can keep doing. To use an example, I have a friend. His name is Ty Cooper. He runs the Eco Dry Cleaners on the he owns the Eco Dry Cleaners on Main Street, and he's also puts on a lot of events geared towards urban communities. And he a challenge for him is that he competes with urban groups that are trying to put on the same similar type of events, but not of the same type of quality. And so one of the things that he tends to do is, not one of the things that he does do is when he's flyering, he has a very consistent design that he uses for his flyers that sets his events apart from other people that might be doing something like that. And I think that's really important as far as getting information out to communities, is that, if you are doing flyering like you all were doing, that in the future that you consistently use the same sort of fonts, the same sort of images, things that link
branding.
The branding, that's right.
What about potentially you helping organizations? Is there value in maybe working with other organizations to flyer consistently? So not just PCA's flyers, but right. Symphony's flyers or Second Street Gallery's flyers. Should we encourage that kind of?
I really think so. And I think that, you know, any type of organization, especially the ones that are present here, who understand this sort of thing can approach PCA like, okay, you know, what's a workable format? For events that you've done that have been successful, how did you present it to them? And can we use that same sort of format in our flyer? And it's almost like the physical face that people might trust when they walk into a community is also present on the flyer, you know? And I think that just really works, you know?
So standardizing some of the mechanisms for marketing.
That's right. That's a very good way. Thank you.
Going back to the organization being this initiative's greatest asset, I've heard that today through listening to what you just said through Abundant Life. I think it's also important to point out that, first of all, I come from an organizing background, so I can see Leslie spending the next month doing nothing but one-on-ones. And one-on-one with every organization that's a possible partner, and organization or one-on-ones with everyone around this table or whatever to get the feedback. And through that feedback comes the plan. But in looking at those organizations, I would also want to point out, and I think Wendy can speak to this, that every organization has their own capacity level. And so PCA might need to play a role in a little hand-holding or helping facilitate these organizations, because they might have the relationships with the people, but each organization will have a different capacity level. So while one organization is well-organized and has the staff to get the transportation, to get the food, to get the kids there, to get the word out, other organizations will not have that.
And what can we do?
And what can you do to help? And so that you are the broker between these free arts events and these nonprofit organizations that have the relationships and have the people.
Can I piggyback on what Holly was saying? I think it's crucial that we start thinking of ourselves as a united community, as opposed to all these little efforts that, you know, we come here and we talk about this all the time. It's like, and I think that's a wonderful thing that you're doing, and maybe this would be the catalyst for us to go, so if I want to do a summer program for my kids this summer, I'm like, I can just look at a menu and go, okay, we could plug them in here, we could do this, we could collaborate with their transportation. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's exhausting to be by yourself and try to serve a community, in my view. I don't know about anybody else, man. I'm getting old.
If I could say something, just from Live Arts, Live Arts definitely has the manpower, we have the volunteers and everything, we have sort of an infrastructure, but I thought the most exciting part of the evening that still finds me, sort of our survey in a way, to me, of how well the evening went, was that the artists who presented the show were teenagers. They were the talent. And you could see the interaction between these kids was really real. Like, I could see myself on that stage. There wasn't sort of this unknown adult up there. Mm-hmm. It was really, and to see the talented peers have something to teach, and I can learn from them, and they can learn from me, too. There was a really strong interaction there. And that's one level of the culture that I think has been not mentioned.
That's a great point. And I mean, the way I kind of see this unfolding is the action group that needs to move this forward and say, you know, one of the key elements of making change happen or building, nurturing that growth and interest for various art forms is getting peer-to-peer relationships going. What organizations are already programming in peer-to-peer kinds of ways, and how can we get that out there more boldly?
I think that if we can have one-on-ones with Leslie to say these are the groups we work with, and that we already have this established relationship and we're trying to, because the depth of that relationship is already established, and then work multifaceted as well.
And I want to clarify that it's not the groups that we're working with. It's this idea that it's the groups that the community is working with. So right. We were kind of saying, this is who's out there.
Right.
Yeah. Use it. You know, use it while you've got it. And just greasing the wheels.
One thing that you might want to, I guess, think about going forward is you're pretty plugged into the arts organizations here, but it's been said a number of times it's the pieces within the community that matter, and, you know, nurturing that side. I think it's going to be really key.
That's the ambassador program kind of approach, is looking at people in diverse communities who can be arts leaders, who aren't already tapped in, or may already be, but could be mentors for other arts leaders in other communities, and how can we get them connecting and knowing that this is something that we hope is on their to-do list. A couple of takeaways for me. One, our experience with film festival was that we did have really good success working with mentoring groups to bring a diverse audience to the festival. And one of the places that I started last fall was, who are the mentoring groups in town and who is the lead person for those and how can I get involved with those? And, you know, just starting to build that database of who those folks were and starting to develop that relationship with them. The opportunity to sort of pick up on that, because that really was a successful strategy. It's come up a number of times. And to develop that sort of network so that each of the arts agencies is not looking for those mentoring groups and who the contact this year is, I think, a great sort of connect the dots piece for you guys. That's a central resource that we can use. And then another piece that came out of the board was you telling me about arts access, and here's an opportunity, and the strategies that you used over the course of the year to outreach to communities on our behalf is how I saw it. So when you're out there organizing the barbecues and talking with people about what the different organizations have to offer, I thought that was another outstanding strategy that's very concrete and getting the word out. I see that as being real proactive and real beneficial to everybody, because we're not competing. It's not an either or. It's all of the above. Choose from the menu. Enjoy something right. that you like.
You know, it will be a very good concept if you already tap into the groups that are already in the community. But the interesting thing is that all these groups are unique to themselves.
Or they believe they are.
Yeah. You know, and they have their own focus.
Yeah.
And the arts is a different entity altogether. It is also unique to itself. One thing that can be very effective is that if we are able to get even one person from the target communities to be very much interested, not an adult, a youthful person to be very much interested in a particular field of art. I'm giving you an interesting example. Last year, around this time, I went to Ghana, where I originally come from, with a delegation from the city council, the Chamber of Commerce, and other community leaders. And we wanted to get the other communities involved. So what we did was that we sponsored one person from Hardy Drive, a student from Hardy Drive, to go and do the filming of the trip. And so we took his mentor from the lighthouse with this guy. He's called Quentin, and he's yes. And we took him to Ghana, did all the videos and everything, came back and put it together into a documentary. And you couldn't believe the response that we had from Hardy Drive. Everybody, and in July, we have this African-American Arts and Culture Festival. And there's a part called The Taste of Ghana, where we cook a lot of African food for people to come and eat. The whole hall was full from people from Hardy Drive coming to see their own making this.
So what you're talking about is providing opportunities for young people potentially, or anyone really, to step up and show their own artistic vision of something that's happening and reach out to their community through.
Yes, let's
their
even
own
get
work, their own excitement for it.
Right. Yeah, let's even get one. Let's get one person. Just let's target one person. grab him out of the whole bunch and then lead
and
him or her.
A group like The Bridge, for example, which does the photo workshops with Southwood, they already know of those one or two kids that are the stand-up kids that really have a passion for it, and it's a matter of bringing them to a bigger community stage or making that message a little bit louder. Becky, I'm going to take these two comments and then wrap it up.
It just has occurred to me that in the last year we have these two large community-wide conversations going on that are so productive, that what you're doing here on behalf of the arts and the Dialogue on Race, which has really been such an important initiative, and we'll sort of see how it continues and what gives birth to. But if I were making my own to-do list for next steps, I would certainly want this action group to communicate really directly with the Dialogue on Race. You know, there's going to be this thing on the 15th, but certainly something will continue out of that. You'll know who the leaders are. Because it seems to me that what the Dialogue has been doing is to identify the kinds of cultural roadblocks that you were starting to identify, having to do with trust, having to do with historic resentments, you know, in this community, the kinds of things that could undermine the best laid plans that any given project might have arranged for, that are less visible. It's more the sort of sociological, cultural insights that could be helpful. It seems to me that these two dialogues, it'll be just such a wonderful synergy of two community-wide conversations that are so important. Maybe it's happening already.
Yeah, I kind of feel like my worlds are colliding. I was involved in the Dialogue on Race, and I'm actually going to be presenting at the May 15th event for actually a monument to be built for the Vinegar Hill area. So that was one of the action steps my group decided, and that's what I'm going to be presenting. I haven't even actually talked with Maggie about it because it's just this idea that's been floating around in my head. But I kind of feel like there's something
more
going
dovetailing
on.
The more dovetailing of efforts, the better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that seems like such a beautiful example, because one of the big open wound, you know, is Vinegar Hill. And to do an artistic tribute, acknowledgement of that community-wide, you know, historical wound, I just think is a beautiful way to... We'll be busy.
Yeah.
It sounds like meaning-making. Meaning as a community, either the individual communities within it or the community as a whole, you know, what kinds of meaning we can draw out through the arts, which is in large part what the arts are for, right? Cultural meaning.
Well, and it just kind of expanding on something you said, I'm aware of a lot of these wonderful programs in communities that communities are, you know, proud of and want to exalt, simply because I'm connected with some of the groups that are doing the work on the street level in those communities. A lot of people aren't as aware. And, I mean, listening to Jean about their well-established opera program and going into schools and how they do it, listening to how you all made it possible for a young person to go abroad and come back and then share what they created. If we had a way to start opening up the awareness of those types of things, I think it will start to connect those communities as well. One community knowing what another one's doing as we're starting, like what you were saying, getting one person from all these areas to really become engaged on that level, if they then are able to step into that next world of collaboratively connecting with one another, we'll really be opening up some doors. So, you know, sometimes I think what's happened a lot, and what I'm really excited about these conversations as I've been coming to them, you know, the many different ones that we've focused on, is that more and more we are starting to learn what each other is doing. And I think we need more of that, and I think it would be really great. PCA has this wonderful vehicle of, you know, the website that pulls a lot of things into cohesion, but I don't know if this piece has really been addressed. And it kind of ties into my whole thought about we're not identifying the cultural assets of the community yet, and yet we are talking about them.
Can I just say one thing? I think that
Maggie, you have done a great job of studying the groundwork for what you've been doing since last fall.
Oh, yeah.
And also, I tend to disagree with you. I think that there are a lot of community members, like, not I would say, it's like, I know Southwood, we had from the photography, from the different programs that you know, the Bridge and we've been involved with, we have a lot of community members that are in that same situation. So
right.
It's not like this hasn't started.
No.
A lot has to do with the leadership of what you guys are doing. And Maggie, you're doing a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what we as a community need to do is focus on getting cohesion. It's our job to get it together.
Well, and I don't want you to misunderstand. I'm not saying it hasn't been done. I'm seeing it done. I want to see more of it. I want to hear more of these stories. I'm excited about that.
So the opportunity then is to serve on an action group. I'm going to just make our plug. What we would love is for any of you who feel like you have something to give, whether it's insight, time, leadership, community connections, we want you to be involved in this. And we can structure the action group so that it is not very time-consuming if you only have a little bit of flexibility in your schedule. But the more heads we have around the table as we move forward and let these ideas kind of go through this drainer and trickle out into real programs that we implement for the next 2 years, the better off we'll be. And we're going to be here again next year at the midway point of this project. So this is the first of three discussions, really, about this follow-up strategies. And so I guess what I'm going to do is invite you all to email me if you're interested in being on an action group, or if you have knowledge or feedback that you want to have me file in the folder for the action group when we begin meeting this summer. This is really the starting gate, and what you've given us is a lot of new ideas to think about. I think in your own way you prioritized for us relationships, looking at kind of creating meaning and also creating more awareness of what we already have to offer here in our communities, and activating the success stories, whether they're individuals who have command over certain communities as far as leaders or mentors, whether it's organizations that have resources, organizations that don't have resources and want to connect. You've helped us see kind of where the pressure points, I think, are. Thank you for that. So I hope you felt, I know that it's a really frustrating topic, and it's one that gets bigger and bigger, not smaller and smaller. And we haven't even thought about like the diversity of content of the arts programming in this town, which is a whole other conversation that we may get to 5 years from now. But it would mean a lot to us if you filled out the evaluation sheet in the back of your folder, and you can leave it in the bin when you head out. And if you're interested in action group participation or even guiding an action group, from afar, find me, email me, pick up one of the packets that sort of looks at the curriculum that we hope the action group will follow, and thanks again for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. You do that.
It will make time. Thank you. No problem.